Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham, and on today's show, we'll hear from a Minnesota Air National Guard unit that recently returned from deployment overseas. We'll speak to a couple of foundations that provide education scholarships to dependents of current service members and veterans, and we'll check in with one of our county veteran service officers. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
In the National Guard, we place a high value on physical fitness. Just as important as our physical well-being is our mental well-being. This month, we recognize Mental Health Awareness. I want to bring attention to the concept of resiliency and what it means for our soldiers and airmen. Resiliency is about our ability to adjust to and recover from adversity. While serving in the National Guard, we juggle many responsibilities, from family commitments to our civilian careers, all while fulfilling our commitment to our nation's defense. At times, we can feel overwhelmed. It is a natural response to our fast-paced lives. If you are experiencing difficulties maintaining this balance, I want you to know that help is available and that asking for help is a sign of strength. Our psychological health coordinators offer confidential assistance. You can call them 24 hours a day at 651-282-4029. That's 651-282-4029.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. The 210th Engineering Installation Squadron is a Minnesota Air National Guard unit located at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport on the 133rd Airlift Wing Air Base. Here in the studio to talk about the squadron's recent deployment to Africa is Senior Master Sergeant Alan Croth and Senior Airman Brandon Wortham. Senior Master Sergeant Croth is the Superintendent of Projects and Plans for the 210th EIS. In the civilian world, he's a Senior Director of Integrations and Infrastructure for United Health Group. Brandon Wortham is in the cable section at the 210th EIS, and in the civilian world, he's a technician with JB Media. Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, it's good to have you in the studio, and of course, it's good to talk about the great things that our National Guard, in this case, the Minnesota Air National Guard, is doing, supporting the mission both home and abroad. And what I want to do is just kind of get a little background on the both of you. And I'll start with you, Alan. Tell us a little bit about your military history and where you came from and what brought you into the Air National Guard.
Sure. So I've been in for 15 years. I'm a senior master sergeant, as you obviously stated before. So I've made it up into the senior ranks, which has been great. The Engineering Installation Squadron has been an awesome home. It's a little bit different than people, I think, see the military as, because it's more of a niche, right? It's not like traditional. I don't fly a plane. I don't do traditional military stuff. We specialize in IT infrastructure installation, which is great.
All right, perfect. And Brandon, what got you to join the Minnesota Air National Guard? You kind of were a late bloomer. You joined at the age of 25.
Well, I was at a point in my life where being in a band wasn't feasible anymore, so decided, hey, I better get my butt in gear. And my father told me that the Air Force has white meat chicken and ice cream on Sundays, so the choice was pretty easy for me.
Yeah, and you know, in full disclosure here, if you didn't catch it in the intro, Brandon Wortham happens to be my son, so it's good to have you in the studio, and we'll talk a little bit about your service. So, Alan, you've been in for 15 years, mm-hmm. and you know that's a good career. I imagine you've got a few years ahead of you, but the deployment that the 210th went on to Africa, that was your second deployment, but you've also deployed multiple times throughout your 15-year career. You call them mini deployments or training deployments. How has that been for you, the multiple deployments you've been on, and then how was Africa a little bit different than your previous ones?
Sure. So it's been an interesting ride. Very early in my career, I had an opportunity to travel a lot, which was great because I didn't have my family and kids, which I do have now. So very early, I got a lot of experience and traveled a lot with the 210th and went on a number of short trips. We call them TDYs, right? and basically temporary duty assignments. And it's really evolved. My career has kind of evolved into a different state now where it's a lot harder to leave, right? Early in my career, back in 2012, I was on a deployment when my son was born. My first son, Hayden, was born while I was overseas. Technology wasn't quite as good as it is now, so I didn't get to, you know, I got to be a part of it. I got to be a part of it in a way that was pretty fun. But nowadays, with technology, it's so easy to stay connected. My most recent deployment was a totally different experience, right, from where I was.
And we'll talk a little bit about the responsibilities you all had in the command group or command cell. Now, Brandon, this is your first deployment, and it's kind of unique because you've been married for 9 months now. In 6 months of it, you were deployed. So what kind of impact did it have on your family, your brand new wife? What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was always a possibility being in the military that I would take off. So at least that was something we had discussed going into the marriage. I mean, it is what it is and you work through it. Luckily, communication was easy and we're both able to immerse ourselves in our work. So that way it doesn't seem like we're 6,000 miles apart or whatever it ended up being.
Yeah, and we should point out that your spouse, Erica, her dad is a retired military guy from the Air National Guard as well. So it's not like the military life or the possibilities were any type of a surprise or a secret.
Correct. And you just make sure that you have a good support system in place for the people back home because the person back home has a harder job than you do. They're dealing with everything plus their normal life. So,
yeah, you know, and that's one thing that's so important to point out. We talk about out on this show as often as we can when we have our National Guard units or military units come in and talk about deployments, just the sacrifice that a family member has. We know because I served, and it's way easier for us to go somewhere and do the thing that we're supposed to do because it's just, you know, it's kind of it's laid out, you know, your day is pretty much set, but things are still going on back home. So that's a crazy transition. So now, Alan, you've got the kids. Obviously you talked about the technology and things like that, but what about your wife? I mean, how does she handle you being away when, you know, you've got kids at home?
Yeah. I mean, this one was, I think, substantially more tough than previous trips for us because our kids are much older. They're very involved in activities, right? They have all kinds of things going on. So, you know, I left, and I think, Brandon, you hit it on the head, right? I have a whole team. I have a whole support system over there on my deployment, whereas I am the key support for my wife. And so she's now juggling all my responsibilities and her responsibilities, just trying to maintain. And so it was this was by far probably the toughest deployment for me, which was which is tough to say because I was in Germany in the command cell, and so not necessarily from an experience perspective the worst situation for myself, but for knowing what my wife was going through back home, it was really, really challenging. And I know my kids struggled a lot with their activities and school, and you could just see now that they're older and they kind of understand, hey, dad's gone. Mm-hmm. It was tough. I mean, it was a lot harder, and I had never really understood it earlier in my career, right? New marriage, young infant child who doesn't really understand when I'm gone, right? And so it was a very, very different experience for me this time than previous deployments.
You know, having we all raise our right hand, we take that oath. But Brandon, was it a surprise for you when you found out that you were going to deploy? Is it something that you sought, you really wanted to do? What was your experience there?
It was definitely something I wanted to do. It did kind of come as a surprise. I was an alternate at first and then found out probably about 4 months before we actually left that I was going to go. So instead of planning for a wedding and doing the normal things, it was, hey, we're getting married and also have to do all these extra things before I go. So definitely, it was good. It was good to do. Glad I did it and would love to do it again and see what happens.
Right. And so, of course, you know, because I was there, I got an invite, actually. I was at the wedding in October, and then, you know, you deployed in January. And so, you know, kind of a quick turnaround from the point of notification to when you left. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, I want to talk about what the 210th did while you were deployed, kind of get that perspective from the command cell, and then from the person on the ground doing some of the work. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. In the last segment, we were speaking with Senior Master Sergeant Alan Croth and Senior Airman Brandon Wortham. Alan, I want to come back to you. As the Superintendent of Projects and Plans, you had an important role in getting the 210th prepared for its deployment overseas. You mentioned you're in the command cell up in Germany, but the work was being done in Africa. Can you tell us a little bit about what that superintendent role is, and then, you know, what was the deployment's mission?
Sure. So I had a unique responsibility, at least for me on this deployment, because it's the first time I've been on the command cell in this type of role. But my mission, my role there was to basically be, if you know what a project manager is or someone who kind of runs a big program, I was essentially driving the operations. So we had a mission there where we had four locations that we were supporting across Africa, where we had a very specific comm mission. So the mission of the 210th is to deliver comm infrastructure to locations. And within Africa, we were driving comm maturity. So we were taking these locations from what they call a tactical state from a communications perspective and delivering more of a enduring solution, right? So getting the bases off of a satellite connection more to a fiber connection, doing things along those lines. There's all kinds of comm infrastructure maturity that we drive from the 210th. But that was what my responsibility was really looking at what the direction was of the four locations that we supported down there and prioritizing for the teams like Brandon and his team in West Africa and the teams that we had in East Africa that were supporting that and really driving the priority for them and making sure they had no roadblocks so that they could work every day and they had the equipment they needed and things along those lines.
And so how large of a deployment was this? I mean, we know typically, you know, the Army will go out as a unit. The Air Force, you'll take out maybe cells. So this wasn't the full squadron of airmen going. How many people went on this deployment and then spread out across Africa?
Yeah, so for us, this was actually a pretty large one. The 210th is made up of roughly 100 individuals, and we're a relatively small community. And so I know your background in the Army, this is small peanuts to it, but there's only about 1,500 members in all of engineering and installation across the United States. And so for us, for this deployment, we had 25 members that were supporting Africa. We also had an additional, I believe it was 9 or 10, I don't remember off the top of my head, that were supporting AFCENT, which is a central command and for the Air Force as well.
And you said it's a small community. I mean, you're right. There's only 15 engineering installation squadrons in all of the Department of Defense, and 14 of them reside in the Air National Guard.
Correct.
So that's a small community.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
All right, so you're directing traffic, so to speak, from Germany to the four sites in Africa. Brandon, you were in Africa. I know that you're in a couple of different locations down there. But what was, you know, from your perspective, kind of your mission set? You know, we talked about the conversion of the communication things. But, you know, on the ground, what were you kind of doing on a pretty regular basis in each of the bases that you were on?
So a lot of what we did was digging holes, putting in manholes and handholes, and running conduit for future fiber to go through. So we kind of got to see the tactical side of things where there's cat cables running across the ground to run internet from tent to tent, and then also see how what we're doing is going to impact the future where, all right, now you have opportunity to run dedicated fibers to each location and each building that needs it.
So I have to ask because, you know, we always joke about the difference in standards as it relates to living conditions from the Army, the Marine Corps, to the Air Force. And, you know, one of the reasons that, you know, I told you maybe you should consider joining the Air Force is because, you know, you generally have pretty good creature comforts with you. What were your living conditions like?
So we slept in a tent.
Which is unusual.
Yeah, very unusual. Usually it's a Hilton Inn. but, yeah, it's like a standard tent, open, put up some curtains for privacy, and sometimes the air conditioning works, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, there's a place to sleep, there was food every day, and plenty of water, so it's really all you need.
Yeah, and so back to you, Alan. So, you know, obviously we determine success in, you know, many different ways, right? The group of people went to Africa, to Germany on this deployment. Everybody came home. Did you meet the objectives of the deployment as it relates to some of the conversion you were doing? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know there was some logistical stuff, right? Supply right. demands or whatever, but sure. Success in your eyes?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that we took the ball, right? And here's the biggest challenge we usually face in deployments like this is that in driving like comm infrastructure and comm delivery, over a 4-6 month period is like a snap of fingers, right? It's a short period of time. And so being able to take that ball and push it forward and then set the next teams up for success is really how I define success for us. And when I look at holistically the four locations and where it started and where we left it, 100% we succeeded. Our deployment was successful. We did a lot of things during that deployment that had been somewhat, shelved or put off to the side for a number of years. And actually, Brandon's team was a part of this team that delivered one of the most challenging projects that we faced while we were on this deployment. His team was paramount in the success of that and really driving that success. So it was an absolute success of a deployment. Unfortunately, you get into this place where you don't get to see the finish line, right? Yeah. And you kind of you have to have that mentality of being willing to like do a ton of work for the next guys and really understanding the big picture and that if you don't do your portion, that it's not going to equal success maybe 3-4 years down the road as far as how long some of this is going to take. So from that perspective, I think we had good vision on our team. Our command cell that was up in Germany was a great team. We've all worked together for almost 14 years. I've known that team for my entire career. So, yeah, I think they would agree with me that it was an absolute success.
You know, one of the things that I also great success on is, of course, you know, the support from your family, which it sounds like both of you have had, but also support from employers. So, Brandon, where do you work? And tell us a little bit about how your employer supported you while you were gone.
So I work for JB Media. It's a home media company out of Burnsville. Very small company, 3 owners, 2 hourly employees, and I'm one of them. So myself and my other worker, Ryan, were both prior service members. So they're very supportive of our military. They also hooked me up with a home security system before we left, so that way my wife and I would both have peace of mind when I was gone, and they're thrilled to have me come back. They've just been really, really good at making sure that we have the things we need, both at home and then to help deliver.
Yeah, it's good to have employers that support you. And Alan, you're at a much larger company,
right?
United Health Group, but what kind of support do they provide, and how is that relationship?
Yeah, I have nothing bad to say about UHG from their support of veterans. They do so many great things, like holistically. And you said it, like we come from two different like sides of the world here on this because he works for, you know, a 5-person company essentially. I work for a 350,000 person conglomerate made up of how many companies? And my direct leadership was incredibly supportive. They went above and beyond what my expectations were, right? I know that being a company of that size, there's certain laws to protect veterans and deployed members, and they went above and beyond, right? Both from a financial perspective, from a support perspective, from a don't worry about, you know, don't, we got this. Yeah. Like, don't stress about back home. You focus on the mission, you know, take care of that, take care of your family. This will be here when you get back. And that was really emphasized. I can't say enough. My direct leadership was incredible.
That's great. Yeah. And so we're running out of time here. So just real quick, you know, Brandon, short time in the Minnesota Air National Guard, a good career so far. And is this something you'd recommend to someone else to consider doing if they're wondering what they should do with their life?
Absolutely. I think if you want to serve, if you want a little bit of stability in your life, 100%. Got plenty of opportunities to grow, and especially in the 210th, it's great. It's family. So
yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I wish that we had another, you know, 20 minutes just to really get into more details. But the important thing is that you went, you did your mission, you came back. It was a successful mission. I do want to say thank you for your service and continuing to serve our great country. We've been speaking with Senior Master Sergeant Alan Croth and Senior Airman Brandon Wortham from the 210th Engineering Installation Squadron. It's a Minnesota Air National Guard unit located at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us. Have
Thank
a great
you.
Day.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. In a moment, we're going to speak with one of the foundations, one of the many foundations that provide education scholarships to our service members' dependents. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner. It's a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
As Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, I continue to be impressed by the tremendous work our folks do here. The Veterans Homes Division provides a continuum of long-term care for its residents. With a strong emphasis on remembering and recognizing the service and sacrifices of all veterans, the five veterans homes operating in Minnesota are located in Minneapolis, Hastings, Silver Bay, Laverne, and Fergus Falls. These homes focus on providing excellent care and services that Minnesotans expect of our state's military heroes. We also have three future state veterans homes on the horizon in Preston, Montevideo, and Bemidji. In addition to overseeing the five state veteran homes, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs oversees more than 20 state programs that help eligible veterans and their families secure state and federal benefits. These teams also provide programs and services relating to higher education, benefits, burials, claims, outreach, homelessness, and veterans preference. Key partnerships include the Veterans Service Organizations, County Veterans Service Officers, and a number of public and private service providers. I look forward to continuing to work with these important organizations to serve our veterans here in Minnesota.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I mentioned before the Commissioner's Corner, we're going to talk to a foundation that provides education scholarships. And joining me on the phone to speak about the Think Great Foundation is Eric Thurwanger. Eric, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, Doug, thanks so much for having me on today.
Hey, it's good to have you on. I know we've had you on the show a couple of times before. You know, and when we talk about all of the different benefits and the resources and things that our service members have available to them because of their service, one of the big things we talk about is education and the benefits that go along with it. Right. You know, people are familiar with things like the GI Bill. And you started the Think Great Foundation because you felt as though maybe – there was a population kind of being overlooked, and that's the military spouse population as it relates to education scholarships. So maybe you can just tell us a little bit about the genesis of the Think Great Foundation and really what its mission is.
Yeah, absolutely, and thank you. You know, we're very passionate about military spouses. As a veteran myself, when I served in the Marine Corps, I was exposed to the military spouses and how challenging life was, and there was probably even less from a support standpoint back in the late 80s, early 90s than there is even today. But I've had the opportunity to go all over the country and speak with units, speak with commands at family readiness programs and things like that, where I get to share messages on goal setting and things that really inspirational, motivational messages, and the spouses were there. And so I got to meet spouses from all different branches, and started to really understand the challenges and the sacrifices that they make, especially when they're uprooting their families and moving all over the country, if not the world. And what we found was one of the common sacrifices they make is their education. So many spouses have started higher education or some form of trade school or you know, junior college or university, and then based on the challenge they face, and sometimes it's financial, they stop pursuing that. And so we created the Think Great Foundation, launched it in 2019, and our mission is to enrich and enhance the lives of military and veteran spouses by supporting the accomplishment of their educational goals, which will also lead to career goals. And so we've had a really, really great run and had a lot of great positive feedback on the impact we're making.
And Eric, I know that last year the foundation awarded over $50,000 in scholarships. This year the foundation's goal is to award over $100,000 in scholarships.
Yeah.
Tell us, who's eligible to receive one of the scholarships from the Think Great Foundation?
So that's a great question. If as long as, and it could be somebody that's married to a service member currently serving or was married to them during their time of service. So really the key requirement that we have when they apply is that the time of service and the time of marriage coincided. And so that's what we look for during the application process as a starting point, is that they were married during the time of service. So we can say thank you for the sacrifices they've made and really help to be a support system for them.
And, you know, I already mentioned some of the dollar value that you have awarded, your goal to award. But what other kind of impacts do you see the foundation making on the lives of these military spouses?
That's great, because the impact that we make, I think, far exceeds just helping them stay in school or get in school. And, you know, like you said, we've awarded a lot of money out. The scholarship amounts can be anywhere from $500 to $5,000. And it's helped with book costs and things like that, and tuition. But I think on a deeper level, it helps with self-esteem. It helps position them to take better care of the family that they're already taking care of, and starts to build up their own confidence levels, gives them their own identity, and gives them a greater purpose in their day-to-day life. So I think it far exceeds the scholarship itself. I think there's so many ancillary benefits that come with that that's good for the military spouse, for the service member, for their children, for their entire family.
And Eric, I know that, you know, obviously you need to raise money in order to award, you know, $100,000 in scholarships.
Yeah.
And you've got a pretty big event coming up in November, the Think Great Foundation Gala. Can you give us
a little bit
of information about that, how people might be able to donate, how they might be able to come and actually have a seat at one of the tables?
Yeah, absolutely. We host through the Think Great Foundation, we have the Homefront Heroes Gala. We're going to host it this year, November 17th. It's a Friday. We'll be hosting it at Brackets Crossing right here in Lakeville. We had over 200 people there last year, about 211 to be precise. We're anticipating 250 this year. And so we have sponsorship opportunities where we have businesses and actually some individuals that are sponsoring tables, so they can have a table with, you know, up to six guests, and some of them will actually have military spouses and their guests sitting with them. But they can also go to our website, thinkgreatfoundation.org, and we have a spot on there to donate. They can buy t-shirts. Every little bit helps. Every dollar that comes in gets to go back out in a scholarship. So we are actively looking for table sponsors, and we have some other sponsorship opportunities as well for the event. And anybody that's interested can reach out, and we're happy to send them some of that information, which is also on our website, again, thinkgreatfoundation.org. So there's a donation site, and then there's also some information on the gala itself.
Well, that's awesome. And Eric, you know, I know that the Think Great Foundation is a not-for-profit organization, so the money coming in is going right back out to support these education scholarships. I want to say thank you for spending a little bit of time with us on Minnesota Military Radio. Everyone, please go to thinkgreatfoundation.org. Look for that additional information. Eric, again, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Doug. Appreciate your support.
You bet. That's Eric Thurwanger. He is from the Think Great Foundation. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk to another foundation that provides scholarships for dependents of our service members and veterans. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham, and we were talking about foundations that provide education support to the dependents of our service members, and we have the pleasure to speak with Anthony Rayola, who is representing the Folds of Honor. Anthony, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, Doug, thanks so much for having me. Really excited to be here today.
Yeah, Anthony, you know, I said in the last segment how important it is that we recognize the dependents of our service members. And in this case, the Folds of Honor has a little bit of a different eligibility requirement. And I'm wondering if you might be able to just kind of give us the quick rundown of the Folds of Honor and then who is eligible to apply for the scholarships.
Yeah, definitely. Well, first and foremost, to all your listeners, I want to say thank you to anyone out there that has served our country and defended our daily freedoms here at Folds of Honor. We're very appreciative of that. But our scholarships, we give educational scholarships to the families of fallen and disabled service members. So while we know there's a lot of great organizations out there that support the veterans themselves, our organization is solely focused on supporting the family members that who also make the sacrifice alongside their loved ones.
Yeah, thank you for that. And that's a pretty unique distinction, you know, compared to other organizations, the scholarships that that are provided. So if somebody falls into that category where they are a family member, a spouse or a dependent of a fallen or injured disabled service member, where do they go to get information to even discover whether or not they might be qualified?
Yeah. So the easiest place to go is to our website, foldsofhonor.org, www.foldsofhonor.org. And on that website, you'll see a tab that says scholarships. And there's a bunch of different resources on that tab talking about the two different types of scholarships we have. We have a children's fund, which is K through 12, and then a higher education scholarship, which is both for spouses and dependents. Going for master's degrees, bachelor degrees, doctorates, trade schools, tech schools, you name it. That's our most popular one and a little bit easier to attain as far as qualifications go.
And Anthony, the Folds of Honor Foundation, it is a 501c3, so obviously it's a not-for-profit organization. How much has Folds of Honor already given back to our dependents and spouses and scholarships?
Yeah, so we were founded, Folds of Honor was founded in 2007 by Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney. He's a fighter pilot that did two tours of duty and wanted to help a family in his local community. And since then, since 2007, in his first scholarship that he gave out in Grand Rapids, Michigan, we have since expanded to all 50 states and some U.S. territories with over 44,000 scholarships given out and over $200 million in awarded money since 2007. Locally here in Minnesota, we've given out over 500 scholarships and over $8 million in educational scholarships. And, you know, we're very proud of that. We're growing. We just had a record year for applications come in with over 256. You know, we're on here today. I think the biggest thing for Folds of Honor Minnesota is that we're trying to find more families. We know there's more families out there that we can support, and we want to see our scholarship application numbers rise and help as many families as possible.
And I think it's important to make that distinction. That is, Folds of Honor obviously is national, but you are representing Folds of Honor Minnesota, the Minnesota chapter. And it's great to hear that, you know, there's been over 500 scholarships and $8 million given right back to, you know, people here in Minnesota.
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, in my role, being able to meet and see some of these families firsthand, I know how selfless military families are and thinking that they're, you know, there's someone else out there that needs it more than we do, you know.
And so,
I get to see that firsthand every day. And again, we are looking to find as many families as we can, and we want to impact everyone.
And Anthony, you talked about, you know, you are looking for additional applications, you know, from people here in Minnesota. So that's one way that the community can support, you know, right, make those recommendations of those that might be eligible. But what else could our listeners do to help support the Folds of Honor mission?
Yeah, Well, to go along with the scholarships, obviously there's fundraising that needs to happen and raising dollars to give back to these families because they go hand in hand. And the easiest way I could recommend is, again, going to the Minnesota chapter website so that the money stays here local. That's minnesota.foldsofhonor.org. And you can find our donation tab there and do either a one-time donation or what we call our squadron, becoming a member of our squadron, where you give $13 a month recurring. So that's $156 throughout the year. And it's a monthly payment that gets automatically withdrawn. And the reason that it's $13 is there's 13 folds that it takes to bring a flag to its triangular shape before being presented to a family. And that is our logo, is the folded flag.
Well, Anthony, it's been just a pleasure chatting with you just for a short period of time here on Minnesota Military Radio. Again, give us the website that people can go to.
Again, this is foldsofhonor.org. Make sure to click on the scholarships tab, the donate button. You can, go through all the different ways that you can support, look at what events we have going on and what dates those are if you want to try and get out to some of those. Again, we have two different scholarships, the Children's Fund and the Higher Education Fund. And again, this is for both the spouses and the dependents. And our next application window is going to be opening on February 1st, 2024.
We've been speaking with Anthony Rayola. He's the Regional Development Officer for Folds of Honor Minnesota. Anthony, have a wonderful day. Thanks for joining Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Joining me on the phone now is Marty Howes. Marty is the president of the Minnesota County Veteran Service Officers Organization, also the Roseau County Veteran Service Officer. Marty, in the last two segments, we were talking about scholarships and foundations that support our military members, their dependents, their families, and organizations like Folds of Honor, like the Think Great Foundation. I've done some quick Googling, and there's so many scholarships available out there for our military members. A couple of sites that I saw people can go to is Military One Source, militaryeducation.org. Tell us a little bit about how a county veteran service officer can help our veterans and their dependents.
Yeah, you bet, Doug. First off, I got to say thank you for having me. It is just super to be back here again on the radio and talking with you and all of our listeners out there. I appreciate this time. But, when we get those veterans, they come into our offices and, a lot of times we're working at getting them into the VA for their health care or filing service-connected disabilities and those types of things. And what comes out of that is that develops a little bit of a personal relationship, and then we end up talking with that veteran. We learn about their families. We learn about their, wives, children, their ambitions and that kind of stuff. And when that vet's in our office and we're talking with him or her, that opens up that door to where we can provide the information or the referral or the resources to Folds of Honor or Think Great, just all the wonderful resources that are out there that can make just a positive difference on people's lives. It's really awesome.
And so, we talk about making sure if you are a veteran, if you're a dependent of a veteran, if you're a surviving spouse of a veteran, you need to have that relationship with a county veteran service officer. I mean, it's so important because of resources like this that they might not be aware of as it relates to education.
Oh, exactly. And then we can't forget about the VA's VR&E is what it's called. It's Veterans Readiness and Employment Program. And it used to be called Volk Rehab and Employment. But not only can it help with employment, it can help with secondary training at a college, vocational, technical, or business school. So, it's a very simple start. The main requirements are the vet must have at least a 10% service-connected disability and not have a dishonorable discharge. It is about a 12-year eligibility after your discharge or after the date you receive your first VA service-connected rating. So we want to get you in there right away and get you taken care of, but there's some time there, and we can help get you into that, get you set up with the VA, and get that going.
And Marty, you're tied in, obviously, with these external type of resources, but you're also tied in with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and I know they've got some education benefits or support that they can provide as well.
Oh, Doug, you must be reading my mind today. I tell you, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers has a deep history and a wonderful relationship. And yeah, they've got the Minnesota GI Bill, and you know, any veteran under the age of 62, members of the Reserve, National Guard, they can all apply to this. And it's on the webpage, but when you come see us, every CVSO is very well trained on pointing you out on where you need to go, what you need to do, how we can get you there, how we can get you that assistance. And we also have these neat little like regional maps so that we can send you off with that, and you're going to feel good when you go because you're also going to have another point of contact that's closer to your community to get you what you need. So the bottom line is come see us because we just might make your day.
Well, yeah, I really appreciate that. That message just can't be said enough. Go see your county veteran service officer. If nothing else, stop in, let them know that you're in the community, and they'll put you on their list so when things come up benefit-wise, you'll be the first to be informed about it.
You betcha. And we're proud to do it and happy to do it every single day.
Well, Marty, thanks for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio. I really appreciate it. I hope you have a great rest of the day.
You too, Doug. Thanks a lot.
As we near the end of our time together, I'd like you to know that this show is for you. So if you have topics, if you've got suggestions for topics, or maybe even just some feedback on the show, or if you're a Minnesota veteran, you want to share your story, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Click on Contact Us. Send us that message so we can get your topic included in the show. I would like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Eric Thurwanger, Anthony Rayola, Senior Airman Brandon Wortham, Senior Master Sergeant Alan Croth, Marty Howes, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week when we get an update from the Fisher House. We'll check in with the American Legion and speak to the director of the Minneapolis VA healthcare system. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Doug Wortham. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I hope you have a great week and you find a way to make a positive impact on someone's life.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at Minnesota Military Radio. Radio.com.